All right, Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. I'm pleased to be here with you. Thank you very much for joining us. Members of our studio audience can pick up your United Israel calendars. Dr. Tabor sent these to me, and the rest of you will have these mailed. The goal, right, John, is next week. So that's what we're going to try to do. We've got quite a few envelopes to stuff. Last year we sent out a couple of hundred of these, so we are hoping to get these bagged up and off in the mail next week. So be on the lookout. Now, having said that, if for some reason you moved or you just want to make sure that you're on the list, or if you're someone who just started listening to us and you didn't receive a United Israel Jewish calendar last year, then email me and I'll make sure that you get one of these. There's no charge for these. They are gifted to United Israel from one of our supporters. And then we just mail these out, as many as we have, and we've got quite a few. So I can only send one because we're getting to the point where the order is used to, you know, I could have a couple. I might have one in my bag and one on my in my kitchen and one at the study and one in my office. And now we can't do that any longer. And that's a good thing. So again, United Israel Jewish calendar, the verse that is on this Jewish calendar says the steadfast love of Jehovah never ceases. His mercies never come to end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Lamentations 3:22-23. Beautiful verse. So this calendar has all the festivals, all the Torah readings, and of course the Hebrew calendar day, candle lighting times, and so forth. So you want to get one of these and make sure that I have your address. Having said that, we are in a new series, which I have titled the series, The Tribes. It's a vast topic. I mean, I can teach on this and probably will for weeks, months, years, who knows? It's such a vast subject, and it is the importance of this subject can't be underestimated or underemphasized, because truly this subject matter is the core biblical message, because we're talking about something that is very much a part of the biblical history, of the present day reality, and the future that is portrayed in the prophetic literature. What we're really talking about when we talk about the tribes is the method whereby, according to the Hebrew Bible, that Jehovah chose one man and his seed, one man and his seed after him, to model his way for all the families of the earth. Now, some of the passages that I will quote throughout this series, you'll become very familiar with them if you're not already. One of those is found in Isaiah chapter 51. In Isaiah chapter 51, it says, you who chase after or pursue righteousness, you who seek Jehovah, look to Abraham and to Sarah. This idea is to look back to this one man and his family, because that's where the plan begins. We're really talking about the plan of the ages, the plan of God according to the Hebrew Bible. Now, if you don't believe in the Hebrew Bible, then you're not going to believe that this is a plan of God. But if you believe in the Hebrew Bible, you're going to see very clearly, and even more and more clearly as we work through these essential points, how important this one man and his family really are to bringing about the ultimate realization of God's plan for humanity. Now, the end result of God choosing one man and his family to model his way is something that is very essential, and I'm going to be talking about this today, and that is this: It's very clearly articulated in the text that ultimately the intended result of God choosing Abraham and his family is so that blessing will ultimately be to the ends of the earth. That blessing will come to, as the Hebrew Bible puts it, all the families of the earth. In Hebrew, kol mishpachot ha'adama, all the families of the earth will ultimately receive great blessing to and through, because the plan flows to and through this one man and his family. Very, very important. Now, this phrase, kol mishpachot ha'adama, occurs three times in the Bible. It's twice in the patriarchal narratives and once in the prophet Amos. Now, I'm going to cover these, and I'm going to cover much more. But I want to begin today's class, because I've titled today's class, The Passing of the Patriarchal Plan. Now, a lot of you who've known me for many years know that often I'll get an idea and it will sort of change throughout the week. And then when I sit down on Friday evenings, it changes and morphs a little bit more. And then sometimes during the night, you know, I don't know if it's just a dream or what, but I'll wake up and I'll say, oh. So it's sort of shifted, but I'll stick with the title I came up with, because it's already on Facebook and YouTube. So, The Passing of the Patriarchal Plan. But I want to focus, I want to zoom in on something which I'll bring up in a few moments, which really narrows the focus of this class even tighter than the idea of just the passing of the plan. I'm going to narrow that slightly, but I want to begin today's class by focusing on this idea that all the families of the earth will be blessed. And I want to read several passages to you that sort of reiterate this, okay? What we want to do is, it's one of the topics, when I talk about the tribes, it's one of the topics where people go, well, tell me briefly, What's this thing about the tribes? And you're like, well, briefly is kind of difficult, because here it is, right? I'm reminded of my friend Dr. Robert Eisenman in the 90s, I guess. I was at a conference, and he had just published his huge, it's about this thick, it's on James, the brother of Jesus. And I was at Rice University, and he had given an eloquent lecture on the subject matter of the book, and a little dear old lady stood up in the front row, and she was holding his book, and she said, Dr. Eisenman, could you please give me, in a nutshell, what your book is about? And very frustratingly, he did this. He said, my dear woman, this is a nutshell. So it's like you can't hardly narrow this down. We have to build this subject from the ground up. If you leave Abraham out, if you leave the patriarchal narratives out, you miss the foundation, the bedrock of the subject matter. So we've got to work through. We've got to work through the entirety of Scripture to develop this theme, and we should want to do that. We should want to know what Scripture says about this subject. So beginning today, I want you to go with me to the book of Bereshit, to Genesis chapter 12. Thankfully, we have our dear friend John Baruch Perry, who does a good job of recording what I ultimately come out with on Saturday mornings. So you will probably, within a few hours after this class, be able to download and print his notes. My notes are not easy to follow. His notes are very good, and they follow the teaching that I present. So if you miss some of these verses, I'm sure John Baruch Perry will capture them for you. Thank you, John. Now, beginning in chapter 12, verse 1 of Genesis, now Jehovah said unto Abram, get you out, lech lecha, walk for yourself, get out of your country, from your kindred, from your father's house, to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those that bless you, and curse him that curses you, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. So I like to point out that the plan indeed involves a blessing which will be bestowed upon Avram, who is later called Abraham, and his seed. Last week I taught on the seed of Abraham. I introduced this idea of the passing of the baton from one generation to the next. But notice that everything culminates in blessing to all the families of the earth. This is one of our three passages which mentions Kol Mishpachot Adama, all the families of the ground, you might say, the earthlings, right? I mean, it's really the groundlings. Everybody on earth will ultimately be able to receive blessing because of this Abrahamic promise. Now, notice I'm going to start talking about the promises that God made to Abram and his descendants, because I think a lot of times people get off in their understanding of the Bible because they assume certain things. Either they hold God to promises he didn't make, or one thing or another causes them to not root their ideologies in Scripture. Now, go with me. You know, remember this idea, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Now, go with me to Genesis 18. Again, the patriarch here is Abraham, and these are foundational texts for the subject that I'm going to present today. Go to Genesis 18, and let's go to verse 17. And Jehovah said, "Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I intend to do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him." Here we're talking about the passing of the plan. "And they shall keep or guard the way of Jehovah," which is here defined as to do justice and judgment, "that Jehovah may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him." All right, now, remember in the story, we're actually hearing God's thinking here. He says, "I'm going to reveal to Abraham what I'm going to do." Why? Because he will become a great and mighty nation. And ultimately, that will lead to blessing among all the families of the earth. So this is why he's going to include Abraham. Notice that he says, "because I know him." Now, what does he know about Abraham? He knows this, that he will command his children and his household after him to keep and guard this way, to do justice and righteousness in the earth. See, and because of that, ultimately blessing will reach all the families of the earth. Go with me to Genesis chapter 22. Genesis 22. And I want to begin in verse 15. Genesis 22, verse 15. "And the angel of Jehovah called to Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, 'By myself I have sworn.'" This is Jehovah, right? "By myself I have sworn, says Jehovah, because you've done this thing and not withheld your son, your only son, that I will exceedingly bless you, and I will exceedingly multiply your seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gates of its enemies, and in your seed," get it, "shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." And then it says, "because you have obeyed my voice. Because Avram obeyed the voice of God, and he knows, God already knows, that he's going to pass this on, that he can be trusted to help bring about the ultimate blessing, which will be to all the families of the earth. Now, along the way, I want you to notice that there are certain things which he swears. Now, this is Jehovah says, by myself I have sworn. Imagine the Creator making an oath that all of this is going to take place. Great blessing, possession of the gates of the enemies. Your seed will be more numerous, innumerable, like the sands of the sea, the stars of the heaven. Now remember in Genesis 15, when God reveals to Avram, who doesn't have children at the time, that his seed will be as the stars of the heaven, it says in verse 6 that he trusted Jehovah and it was counted to him for righteousness. So one who models the way of righteousness and justice for the whole earth must himself be righteous. So this is who God is choosing, he and his seed after him, for a very important task. Okay, now go with me to chapter 26. The plan is going to pass to Abraham's son Isaac, and I'm going to read verses 1 through 5. Genesis 26, verse 1. And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of Philistine, to Gerar. And Jehovah appeared to him. Now, Jehovah's appearing to Isaac, okay, Abraham's son, and said, "Don't go into Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell you of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. For to you and to your seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swore unto Abraham your father. And I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and will give to your seed all these countries, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." See, there's our phrase again. Now notice why. Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So he tells Isaac, don't go into Egypt, stay here, sojourn here, and I will now bring to pass through you and your seed the promise, the oath that I swore to Abraham. So this is the passing of the plan. But notice it's tied to an oath that Jehovah made to Abraham. And it's based upon, built upon, it grows out of the main point that Abraham listened to the voice. He was righteous because the way of Jehovah is justice and righteousness in the earth. It's the plan to bring that justice and righteousness to all the families of the earth, right? Now look with me to chapter 28, because we're now going to show that the plan passes to Yaakov, to Jacob, to Israel. Go to chapter 28, and I want to begin in verse 13, 28:13. Now, you'll remember the context. Jacob is fleeing from his brother Esau, and he finds a place. He rests at the night, and he has a vision with the sulam, a ladder, and the angels ascending and descending, the malachim, the messengers. Jehovah is standing above, and he has this dream. And look in verse 13, "And behold, Jehovah stood above it and said, I am Jehovah, God of Abraham your father, the God of Isaac. The land on which you liest, to thee will I give it, and to your seed, and your seed shall be as the dust of the earth. And you shall spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with you and will keep you in all places to which thou goest, will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I've done that which I have spoken to thee of. So now the plan is shown to go to and through all the patriarchs. They're all given the same mission and message, that the plan of God, ultimately, the intended result is that blessing would flow to all the nations, all the families, kol mishpachot ha'adama, all the families of the ground or of the earth. All of them. Kol mishpachot ha'adama. It's told to Abraham, it's told to Isaac. Isaac, I'm going to pass this to you. And you're going to now be the recipient of the blessing and the responsibility to bring it about, to pass it on to the nations. And then to Jacob. Jacob, you now, to you and your seed. But notice that we're talking about an oath. It involves the land. It involves progeny. And of course, blessing. Those being two of those blessings. There's a lot more to it, but ultimately, one who receives that blessing has the great responsibility of passing that blessing on not only to one's family and neighbors and towns and states and nations, but listen to this. The ultimate responsibility for carrying out the plan of Jehovah rests, like still rest, upon the shoulders of a specific group, a literal group, Abraham, his seed, and his household after him. Now, speaking on behalf of Jehovah, the prophet Amos, the cowboy prophet, I like Amos. He says, I'm calling him a prophet. He said, I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. I was taking care of the sycamore trees, and Jehovah told me to come tell you this. Remember, and they were saying, don't come prophesy here. And he said, it's not an option. So Amos in chapter 3, verse 2 says, Raket kim yadati mikol mishpachot ha'adama. He uses that phrase too, all the families of the ground. But here, Jehovah speaking through Amos says to Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you only, raket kim, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. Now, people might hear that and they go, oh, what about me? Well, it's the responsibility of Abraham, his seed, and his household after him to offer up and bring into the fold all the families of the earth. We've talked about this. I've taught on the universal plan of salvation. Others, non-Jews, non-Israelites. I'm going to start making sure you get the terminology right. People who Isaiah 56 talks about. My house shall be a house of prayer for all people. But remember, one's relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is contingent upon how they treat Abraham's descendants. Well, bless those that bless you, curse those who curse you. Actually, it says, curse those who esteem you lightly. All right. This is the greatest mission ever assigned in the history of humanity. The mission that was given to Abraham, his seed, and his household after him, because the world, if you will, rests upon his shoulders. The future of the planet has been given to one man's family. And you might say, well, you're overstating that. Not if you believe this book, I'm not. It's not just a chosenness to feel good about yourself. It's a chosenness that is tied directly to this sense of mission. It's a message and a mission. It's not a mission without a message. It's not a message without a mission. It is a mission and a message that ultimately has an impact on the entire world. Everything is tied to this. Go with me to Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter 4. In Jeremiah 4, and I want to read verses 1 and 2, Jeremiah 4. If you return, Jeremiah is addressing the people of Israel. If you return, this, by the way, is very, very, Im tashuv Yisrael na'um Yehovah. If you return, Israel, says Jehovah, return to me. In other words, don't return. Let me be specific, Jehovah says. Return to me. And if you will put away your abominations out of my sight, without wavering, and will swear, as Jehovah lives, in truth, in judgment, and in righteousness, then the nations shall bless themselves in him, and in him they shall glory. When I tell you that Israel has a great responsibility, a great weight, a mission, it says here, Jeremiah says, that if Israel returns and puts away abomination, and walks upright and swears in justice and righteousness and so forth, then the nations will bless themselves. See, we went through all those passages about it, and then all the nations will be blessed in him, and they'll be blessed. But it's contingent on Israel returning. Now, part of this tribe series is going to get into, in great depth, the return of Israel. So, im tashuv, if you return, Israel. So, I could say, without adding to the Word of God, that the opposite of that is im lo tashuv, if you don't return, then this stuff will not happen. Right? But it says, if you return, return to me. So, it's very important that Israel respond to this message, because the universal plan is tied directly to the return of Israel. And we'll get into that. We'll get into that in great depth. The universal blessing, or the universal blessing as we're talking about it today, is part of an oath made by Jehovah to the patriarchs. So I really want to drill this point home. The universal blessing, this idea that blessing will flow to all the nations, all the families of the ground. Kol mishpachot ha'adama. This is part of an oath. This isn't just some random verse that you can memorize. It's repeated as a foundational element of the plan of God, sworn by Jehovah to the family who is to bring it about. It's an integral part of an oath made by Jehovah. That means it's irrevocable, right? It can't be revoked. It will come to pass, and it's going to come to pass despite any failures or shortcomings of the family who's chosen to bring it about. You might say, well, maybe God's going to abandon that people and pick another people. you know, and they'll be the new Israel. They'll be a spiritual Israel. Maybe because they didn't live up to the expectations, God's going to choose someone else. That's not going to happen. Think of stories in your Bible. Think about Jonah. Jonah is called to do a certain thing. He's reluctant to do it. He chooses a different path. But it doesn't work out, does it? Let me tell you this. When God makes an oath and directs it towards a people, assigning them with a message and a mission, they will do what they're supposed to do. Now, it might take a while. An 11-day trip from Egypt to the Holy Land went to 40 years, but they went in. The plan of God for the ages and for the nations will come to pass to and through Abraham, his seed, and his household after him. It just might take longer than it should have. But despite of any failures or shortcoming on the part of the family that's chosen to bring it about, it's going to happen. So get that. Mark it down. Now, today's Torah portion. I hope many of you, even though I might not teach directly from the Torah portions, keep up with this. It's good to stay in concert, in step with Judah, with the Jewish people. This particular Torah portion is probably, it's one of my favorites. First of all, it's in Deuteronomy, so that already moves it up. But it's Va'etkanan. Va'etkanan is from chapter 3, verse 23 of Deuteronomy through chapter 7, verse 11 of Deuteronomy, which means that this particular Torah portion, Va'etkanan, and I implored, where Moses begins, and I implored of God, it includes the Shema. It includes the Vahavta, you know, Hear, O Israel, Shema Yisrael, Yehovah Eloheinu, Yehovah Echad. And you shall love Jehovah your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your everything. These words which I command you this day. This Torah portion has it all. It's the foundation of the faith that was given to Israel that ultimately will reach the ends of the earth. That's the plan. It contains the 10 words, often called the 10 commandments. Deuteronomy 5, everything that is essential. If someone said, Ross, you're going to be put on a desert island and you can only bring one Torah portion with you, I'd say, give me Va'etkanan, because that's all I need to start from scratch if I had to start a whole nother world up. Get on a boat, Ross, you and all the animals, and try to bring maybe 8 people with you. But you can only bring one Torah portion, Va'etkanan. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7. This is from the Torah portion this week, Va'etkanan. I want to begin in Deuteronomy 7. Now, the tribes. We're going to be talking as we go through this course about the idea that God chose a particular people, the chosen people, right? The chosen. You know, some people who are not Israel, don't believe they're Israel, you know, whatever, they don't feel comfortable with the idea of God having a chosen people. Well, you know who feels less favorable towards that idea? It's the chosen people themselves. You know, this idea of being chosen, you know, one of my favorite movies, Fiddler on the Roof, where Tevye says, I know that you chose us, but could you choose someone else maybe? You know, it's like, it's not always a glorious job. It's because it's mission-oriented. I have a good friend that's a very close friend of mine that's a rabbi. The burden of this people is heavy. Like, you know, if you just had to go about life and someone else had to do all the work for you, that might seem like a more luxurious path to choose. But we're built for this. You're going to see. Just stick with me. We're going to begin in chapter 7 of Deuteronomy, verse 6. 7:6. Ki am kadoshata, because you are a holy people to Jehovah your God. Jehovah your God has chosen you to be a special people to himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Jehovah did not set his love upon you or choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you're the fewest of all people, but because Jehovah loved you and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn to your fathers, has Jehovah brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that Jehovah your God, he is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and truth with those who love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, repaying them that hate him to their face to destroy them. He'll not be slack to him that hates him. He'll repay him to his face. Thus you shall therefore guard the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them. Am Kadosh, you are a holy people, a set apart people, not to just bask in the blessings of the Almighty, but you are a chosen people. The Hebrew Bible uses the phrase segula. It's a precious treasure. It's used for the people, the descendants of Abraham, his seed, and his household, but it's also used for precious jewels. It's the only two uses in the Hebrew Bible. Either you're a diamond, like a real diamond, a hard rock, or you're one of these people. If you're in the biblical definition of segula, I'm going to read you the passages. I'm going to give you five passages today on the segula, the chosen. Go with me to the book of Exodus chapter 19. Exodus 19. And I just want to read verse 5. Now, therefore, Exodus 19, 5. Now, therefore, if, in Hebrew it says if too, by the way. It's in a bad translation. If you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own segula from all the people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. He tells Israel, if you keep my covenant, you're going to be my segula, my special treasure. The whole earth is mine, he says. But you will be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. If. Now, what I'm going to show you is, yes, it's conditional, meaning if you do this, you're going to be a priest. But here's the other part of it. You will be a priest. You will be. You might go reluctantly. You might go kicking and screaming, but you're going to be a priest. And you're going to be a good one. There are times where you're going to go astray. But ultimately, you're going to be a priest. And you will keep my covenant. All right? And you will be my segula, my special treasure. Go with me to Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 2. Deuteronomy 14, 2. Again, I love to read contextually, but today I've got so many passages that I'm going to have to. You go back and read all these chapters and memorize them for next week. Deuteronomy 14, 2. For you, Israel, are a holy people to Jehovah your God. Jehovah has chosen you to be a special possession, a segulah, treasure to himself, out of all the nations that are upon the earth. Think about that. All the nations. He chooses one group and says, you are my special treasure. Now, again, there's with to whom much is given, much is required. It's a job. Go to 26, Deuteronomy 26. Deuteronomy 26, verse 18. Let me start in, it's hard to see where to start. Let me start in 17. You have avouched Jehovah this day to be your God and to walk in his ways and to keep his statutes and his commandments and his judgments and to hearken to his voice. And Jehovah has avouched thee this day to be a people for his own possession, a segulah, as he promised you, and that you should guard all his commandments and to make you high above all nations which he's made in praise, in name, in honor, and that you may be a holy people to Jehovah your God as he's spoken. You're going to be higher. You're going to be in name, in praise, in honor. This is the goal. This is what's going to be the ultimate result. But notice, you have two components to this. Jehovah makes an oath. He swears an oath, which we're going to go through in just a moment. And the people have sworn to adhere to the covenant. You do your part. God's going to do his. And oh, by the way, the people are going to do theirs too. They just might not know it yet. But when they come together, the plan takes off. It's a two-part plan. Go with me to Psalm 135. Psalm 135. You ought to have these verses marked or in some way indicated in the text. These are very important. Psalm 135, verse 4. For Jehovah has chosen Jacob to himself, Israel for his segulah. Jacob, Israel, this people. That's the segula. That's the special treasure. God says, all people are mine. All the nations of the earth are mine. But I've got one segula, one special treasure. All right. Now, one more. I want you to go with me to the book of Malachi chapter 3 and verse 16. Then they who feared Jehovah spoke to one another and hearkened, and Jehovah hearkened and heard it. People talk, Jehovah listens, he hears it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for those who feared Jehovah, took heed of his name. And they shall be mine, says Jehovah, on that day which I appoint as my particular day, and I will spare them as one man spares his own son who serves him. Then you shall return and see the difference between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that does not serve him. Now, in the Hebrew Bible, verse 17, and they will be to me, declares Jehovah of hosts, on that day which I am making a segulah, a special treasure. So he's saying this group that listens, that speak often of his name and so forth, that this book of remembrance God's going to make, that group that he hears, that group in the book of remembrance is the segulah. There's no change in God's plan. God has a segulah. He has a special people. The chosenness, remember, was not because of their number. It's not because you're the biggest group, right? It's not because you're the most in number, because he says you were the smallest. You know, in many ways, Israel's just tiny, especially in the eyes of the world right now, right? Because not all are visible. We're going to get into that more as we work through this. But I want you to notice that he says, You're not chosen. Deuteronomy 7 says, you're not chosen because you're more in number. You're chosen because of Jehovah's love. See, Jehovah loved the patriarchs. And we can read their stories and go, man, you know, they did some things that, you know, how, why? What was it that was so special? Well, think about what God says about Abraham. He says, I know him. I know him. He's going to pass this on to his children. Justice and righteousness. Because Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, are unyielding. They're not going to quit. And that has been the history. The people who have watched empires try to destroy them, and they themselves, their attackers, their opponents, their enemies, have gone by the wayside. They are in the dust of history. Israel was called to a mighty mission, and history has obliged. Jehovah is keeping an oath that he made with the fathers. Now, Israel is told in Deuteronomy 7, here's your part. You are to know that Jehovah is one and there is no other. Jehovah hu ha Elohim. Jehovah, he is God, not another. So if anybody comes up in the history of Israel and says, hey, can I come in and talk to you a little bit about salvation and God, and do you know God? And then they start to describe a different God and the name isn't. Of course, they wouldn't use the name Jehovah or Jehovah. They might say Hashem or Adonai, but you're not going to fool them. They've got a message. Part of this plan is that you have to be faithful. You have to keep covenant and kindness and guard the commands, the statutes, and the judgments. Now, in order to understand this plan and how it operates, we have to really get to a clear understanding of the components of the plan. So this is what I'm going to spend the next few minutes going through so that you have this idea real firmly planted in your heart and your mind and your spirit so that this is something which is not able to be rooted out. I'm going to talk to you about the oath. Because remember, it's over and over we're reading today that God, that Jehovah, made an oath to the fathers. We ought to understand that oath. What did God commit to? What is his promise? And then it's going to help us with a lot of other things. So we know the parties in this covenant. We know Jehovah and we know the people. And we're going to look at the responsibilities of each. But I really want to know, what was it that Jehovah swore? In other words, what are we to, if we're looking at what did God say he's going to do, not what do some people think God said he was going to do. What's the oath? What does he promise? What's his commitment? So I've carefully reviewed every occurrence of Jehovah's oath. Went through carefully, painstakingly, looked at every passage, and I'm going to go through rapid fire a bunch of these passages. So get, like, maybe stretch your fingers, get ready, because I want to do this in a short amount of time. I want you to have all these verses, and I want you to understand that this is essential to grasp if you believe the Bible. If you don't believe the Bible, you're probably at the wrong website. I'm just saying. If you do believe the Bible, if you do believe that within the covers of this Hebrew Bible are the elements of God's plan for the ages, then you're going to learn something here. And you're going to have every key passage that you need to have. It's not only going to help you understand a correct view of history, but it's also going to give you a very clear vision that can be applied and can be used to look at the modern geopolitical situation. Now, there are so many pundits out there. You know me, I don't get into politics, and I'm not today. But I'm going to give you something about Israel that you better put in your back pocket whenever you deal with the geopolitical situation of the day. Because there are a lot of people who don't agree with Ross on this, and that's because they don't know Scripture or they don't believe Scripture. All right? This is not a party thing. This is, you get this right or you get it wrong based on the Bible. You're gonna see this. Like, there's no wavering on this issue, in my humble opinion, and in the opinion of everybody who put a quill to the sheepskin here. This will help, I think, explain to many people why I call myself an ardent Zionist. Like, a lot of people go, well, you know, are you suggesting that everything that Bibi and the Knesset do is absolutely right? No government in the modern world run by man or woman is absolutely right. That's not what I'm talking about. When I talk about being a biblical Zionist, I'm talking about witnessing key events in the history and in the present day reality of this word being modeled out before our very eyes. I'm talking about realization of miraculous happenings within the last several hundred years that prove to me that this word is true. Biblical Zionist. There are people out there that go, well, you know, Zionist is a secular movement, and, you know, why are you supportive? They have orthodoxy. Many Orthodox who don't believe in some of this, right? Well, they believe the biblical text, I would say, but they go, well, you know, this current government, look, don't confuse political stuff with biblical stuff. Right? I'll make that clear. It'll be better. All right. So we're going to start. And what got me really changed direction on this late last night, early this morning, is something that I read in the Parsha that really stood out. We'll get to that. I want you to go with me. We're going to be talking about the oath. All right. And what was it that God swore? Very important. Genesis. Begin in Genesis, chapter 24. Genesis 24. Excuse me. Verse 7. Now, this is Abraham is talking to his servant. And Abraham said to him, verse 6, I'm sorry, beware lest you bring my son back there. Jehovah, the Elohei HaShemayim, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house, from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, to your seed will I give this land. Abraham is talking about the oath. He said, God said he's giving me this land. Right? The oath is made to Abraham and his seed after him. The land. Now, I want you to stick with me. Go to chapter 26, verse 3. We read this before, but you were probably not paying attention. 26, verse 3. Hear it now. Sojourn in this land. He's talking to Isaac. And I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and to your seed I will give all these countries and will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. I'll multiply your seeds as a star of heaven, and will give to your seed all these countries, these lands, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Okay? So here's the oath. I'm going to give you what I swore to Abraham. You ready? Land, progeny, right? This is what he's giving. I'm giving you this land where you are. Don't go to Egypt. Don't be confused. I'm talking about this land, Isaac. This land, and I'm going to multiply your seed as the stars of heaven. Land, seed. All right, now go with me to chapter 50, Genesis chapter 50. Again, I'm going to work through quite a few texts. If you want to depend on John, he's never failed us yet. If you want to take notes, that's fine. Genesis 50, verse 24. And Joseph said to his brothers, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you up out of this land, referring to Egypt, and to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. It's an oath. He says, I'm going to die. I'm not in the land. I'm going to die outside the land, and you're going to bring me there to the land that God swore Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God's oath is about a land, right? Go with me to Exodus 13. Exodus 13 and verse 5. Now, some might say, why does Ross go through every one of them? I just want you to know every one of these. If I give you two or three, you go, okay, yeah, but there's a bunch of other ones that say, no, there's not. You get through with this, you're going to have them all. Exodus 13, 5. And it will be when Jehovah shall bring you into the land of Canaanite, the Hittite and the Amorite and the Hivite and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. When you go into the land of Canaan, the land that was this people, this people, this people, this people, to the land that is sworn to your fathers to give you. Now look down at verse 11. And it will be when Jehovah shall bring you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and to your fathers, and shall give it to you. Pretty clear, right? It's a land. Go with me to Exodus 32. Exodus 32 and verse 13. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants to whom you did swear by your own self and did say to them. So here we go. Here's the oath. You ready? I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have spoken of will I give to your seed, and they shall inherit it forever. Forever. Lots of seed, land, forever. 33, Exodus 33, verse 1. And Jehovah said to Moses, depart and go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought up out of the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, to your seed will I give it. Talking about a literal land, a literal people. Numbers chapter 11. Like, I went through these this morning, and even I was going, I don't know, do I need to do them all? Yes, 11 verse 12. Have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nursing father carries a suckling child to the land which you have sworn to their fathers? Chapter 14, verse 16. Numbers 14, 16. Because Jehovah, now remember, he's saying, you know, if something bad happens to the people, this is what someone else is going to say. They will speak, saying, because Jehovah was not able to bring this people into the land which he swore to them. It's an oath. Look at verse 23, Numbers 14. Surely they shall not see the land which I swore to their fathers. There's a land that's sworn to the fathers. I want you to get these. Chapter 32 of Numbers, chapter 32 and verse 11. 32, verse 11. Surely none of the men that came out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they've not wholly followed me. Now I want you to see that, right? So there's a contingency here. Some will, some won't. That's always the case with the covenant. Now, the people, overall, they have a mission. They're going to. You're going to go into the land. Now, we're going to work through the passages in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 1, verse 8. Behold, I've set the land before you. Go in and possess the land which Jehovah swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give to them and to their seed after them. Verse 35. Surely not one of the men of this evil generation shall see that good land which I swore to give to your fathers, except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, remember, because he wholly followed after God. Chapter 4. Now, these are from our Torah portion today. Chapter 4 and verse 31. For Jehovah, your God, is a merciful God. He will not forsake you, nor will he destroy you, nor forget the covenant of your fathers, which he swore to them. This idea of the covenant that he swore with them forever. Chapter 6, verse 10. And it will be when Jehovah your God shall bring you to the land of which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Verse 18. And you shall do that which is right and good in the sight of Jehovah, that it may be well with you, that you may go in and possess the good land which Jehovah swore to your fathers to cast out all your enemies before you. How many of you are getting the point? Right? You getting it? All right, I'm going to give you some of these because I want to tie some things together. But I'm going to give you some verses. Now, John, Baruch, pay attention because I'm going back on what I said. I'm not going to read through every one of them. Chapter 7, verse 8 of Deuteronomy, verses 12 through 13 of Deuteronomy 7. Deuteronomy 8, 1. Verse 18, Deuteronomy 10, 11, chapter 10, verse 11, Deuteronomy 11 and 9, 11, verse 9, verse 21, chapter 13, verse 17. Now look, every one of these passages deals with the oath that Jehovah made to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Chapter 19 of Deuteronomy, verse 8. Chapter 26, verse 3 and verse 15. Chapter 28, verse 9 and verse 11. Aren't you glad I didn't read all these? Chapter 29, verse 13. Chapter 30, verse 20. Chapter 31, verse 7. Chapter 31, verse 20 through 21, 23. Deuteronomy 34, 4. And there are quite a few in the prophets. Overall, dozens of texts where God declares, or another biblical writer declares, about an oath that Jehovah made to the children of Israel. Jehovah makes an oath to and through the patriarchs. His plan is passed down. It's based upon his love for them. The oath is built on two promises. Progeny. Your descendants will be as the stars of heaven, the dust of the earth, the sand of the seashore. Listen, this is a real people, a literal people, and a specific people. It's not allegorical. We're not talking about a spiritual Israel. I'm sorry, that's not biblical. We're talking about the physical, literal, real descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we're talking about a land, a real, a literal, a physical, and a specific land. It's not allegorical. God says, I will give this land to you, Abram. I will give this land to you and your seed. Isaac, I will give the land to you and your seed as I swore to Abraham forever. Jacob, I will give the land that I promised your fathers, Abraham and Isaac, as a gift for you and your seed after you. It's an oath. Forever. What land am I talking about? A land flowing with milk and honey. A land that is described in Deuteronomy chapter 11 and verse 12. I love this passage. Deuteronomy 11, 12 says, a land which you go in to possess is a land of hills and valleys and drinks water of the rain of heaven, a land which Jehovah your God cares for. The eyes of Jehovah your God are always upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Physical place. He's not talking about heaven, streets of gold. He's talking about a physical land. It's not allegorical. Listen to me. This land, biblically speaking, is not up for negotiation. It's not to be traded. It's not to be part of a peace deal to keep people from blowing up your children on buses. There are other solutions to that problem. The land belongs to the people of Israel forever and always, regardless of what the news pundits say and the weak, spineless people who don't know better and just need to read the text. Look, the land belongs to Israel. Look, go with me to Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 23. The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, and you're strangers and sojourners with me. Jehovah says, this land, it's my land. You're the people who I've chosen to put here. Now, that doesn't mean other people can't live here. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. Anybody can live there who lives peacefully, who seeks, in fact, all the nations of the world will ultimately flow to Jerusalem. It's open. It's open for people of all different faiths. Currently, the land of Israel is a beacon of democracy in the Middle East. Sure. Just like any government, there are problems, there are issues. But look at how this group stands as a beacon of democracy in the Middle East. This land was promised to Israel in an oath. It was reiterated over and over and over. And I did have in my mind I would read through all those verses, but I'm telling you, it's a lot of verses. It's a study that you can do on your own. When you read all of those verses, you say, okay, God made an oath about giving a specific, real, literal, physical people a land. Now, this land is called something very interesting. Go with me to Exodus chapter 6. Exodus 6. In verse 8. And I will bring you into the land, which I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And I will give it to you for a heritage. In Hebrew, that word is murashah. Murashah. A possession, a heritage. He's saying, I'm going to bring you from Egypt, bring you into this land that I have assigned to you for a possession, a heritage, an inheritance, some translations say. The Hebrew is morashah. There's only one other thing that the Torah defines as a morashah. Now, I want you to get this. We're talking about the oath. And the oath involves a specific people on a specific land with a specific task that has global implications. The land is the morashah. It's the heritage that Jehovah gave to his people. He gave them one other thing as a morashah. Only one other thing. the land and a key to it. A key that unlocks living in the land. It's like the keys to the house. The key to the inheritance, the key to possessing the land is also called a Morashah. It was presented to Abraham's descendants in an awe-inspiring event, the likes of which have never happened since. Deuteronomy chapter 33. Deuteronomy 33, this is the only other occurrence of Morashah in all the Torah. Deuteronomy 33, and I'm going to begin in verse 2. Jehovah came from Sinai and rose up from Seir to them. He shone forth from Mount Paran, and he came from holy multitudes. From his right hand went a fiery law for them. Truly, he loves the people. All his holy ones are in thy hand. And they sat down at thy feet. Everyone shall receive of thy words. Moses commanded us a Torah, the Morashah of the congregation of Jacob. When God assigned in an oath the land as an eternal inheritance, a possession for the children of Jacob, he gave them also a title deed, if you will, that contains valuable instructions for staying in that land and living on that land. And it's called the Torah. If you are in the land and not following the Torah, there's a problem. They go together. One is the key or the deed of the property. The other is the property itself. The Bible tells a story about one man's family. It's a physical people. Literal. Real. Not allegorical. Who were chosen, specially chosen, as a segulah of all the nations of the earth. Their task was very spelled out. I'm going to put you in the center of the world, basically. You're going to be a light to the nations. You're going to be a kingdom of priests. You're going to model this way because I know that Abraham passed it down to you. You will model this way. And when you do, nations will be drawn to your light. And they'll want to serve me. And they'll want to follow this way. Now, do they do that? And if they didn't do that historically, will they ultimately do that? And when they didn't do it, what happened? Were the people allowed to stay on the land when they violated the deed? The Morashah. Once you take one piece of the Morashah and neglect it, or ignore it, living there becomes impossible. And that's what happened. These people, because they failed to follow, were scattered. Now, the truth is, ultimately, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. But what it takes to get to that point, Im tashuv Yisrael, Na'um Yehovah, if you return, Israel. What this series is going to do is talk about the departure the separation of the people from the land and how some have come back and others will follow. I want you to join us over the next few classes of this series as we continue to work through and follow this family as if we're following, as the Song of Songs puts it. I love this phrase, "Bigve Hatson," in the footsteps of the flock. Thanks for joining us. Shabbat Shalom.